I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Vermont has embarked on a healthcare payment reform plan that's designed to lower costs and improve medical outcomes. It's known as the all-payer model. The idea is to move away from the current fee-for-service system, where providers are reimbursed for almost every procedure and test, and transition to a system that rewards positive outcomes and allows providers to be paid for keeping their patients healthy. The Green Mountain Care Board oversees virtually every aspect of healthcare in Vermont. Board Chairman Kevin Mullen is optimistic that the all-payer plan will be successful.
If we can improve outcomes by managing people's health more holistically and not just paying for each procedure or test that's done, but rather having the providers focus on a more holistic approach, I think we can be successful.
How is this plan going to be put into place, and what does it mean for the average patient? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, Kevin Mullen. Kevin, great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Bob.
Let me just start off with a very general question that I hear from a lot of folks these days, and that is, why is healthcare so expensive in this country? The rate here seems to be almost double than many other countries. Their healthcare outcomes in some cases are even better than ours. As you look at the big picture, why is healthcare so expensive?
So that might be a day-long conversation, and I don't think I can summarize it in a 60-second soundbite, but I can tell you that in your intro, Bob, you actually hit on some of the things that we're doing differently here than other countries that end up leading to much higher costs. So, for example, primary care. In the rest of the developed world, there are two primary care doctors for every specialist. We have that reversed. We have two specialists for every primary care doctor. And what you take a look at is that we have a system in the United States that basically, if you follow the money, and I always say if you want to get to the heart of any problem that's out there, follow the dollars. And in this particular case, we have a system that's based on getting paid for how many procedures someone performs on you as a provider. And it's not based on health and wellness and keeping you healthy over your lifetime. It's basically there are rewards for taking care of you once you get sick. And Vermont has been a leader on this for many, many years. So well over a decade ago, the Blueprint for Health was started that kind of focused on a continuum of care for people with chronic illnesses. And what we know is that just like anything else, the 80-20 rule really applies to healthcare, where 20% of the population really does cost 80% of our healthcare dollars. And so if we can manage those with chronic illnesses better, we're off to a much better start. And then you take that a step further. And if you could get people to a point where they stay healthy and don't reach some of the chronic illnesses like diabetes because they've lived a healthier lifestyle, then you're beating the cost curve there as well. So, you know, we have tried, you know, I spent 19 years in the legislature. And that whole time, healthcare was a discussion, and it dates back, you know, probably 20 years before I was there. There was a huge discussion, so it's a continuing debate. And we've seen healthcare costs double from 2000 to today, and that would be okay if our economy was growing at that same pace. So if our gross domestic state product was growing at that same rate, then it'd be one thing. But right now, today, we're on the verge of, out of every $5 spent, $1 is being spent on healthcare, and it continues to grow, and that's unsustainable. So if we don't get a handle on costs, it doesn't matter if it's single payer or what have you, nothing will work. So we really have to address the cost issues, and that's what the Green Mountain Care Board is set out to do.
So as you look at this fee-for-service model, do you think there are providers that are ordering unnecessary tests and people visiting specialists who really don't need to?
Well, you hate to point fingers, but one thing is clear. If you look at some of the academic research done by people like Dr. Jack Winberg at Dartmouth and others, that just because you receive more care doesn't mean you have better outcomes. And you can look back over history at things like tonsillectomies and hysterectomies and things like that, where there have been very high rates that necessarily didn't lead to better outcomes. And so I think that for a number of reasons, and many of them very well intended, that there are more procedures being done than are necessary. Some of it leads back to defensive medicine. You know, unless you're fortunate enough to be one of the providers at UVM where their malpractice is paid for by a captive insurance company, when you're buying malpractice insurance on the private market, you're paying a lot of dollars. And I used to think if we could just solve the cost of the malpractice insurance that we could make positive steps against defensive medicine. But in talking to doctors, nobody wants their name in the newspaper as the guy that didn't see something coming. So I think it's just a natural inclination from people to really provide as many tests as possible to verify that their conclusion is accurate. And from the consumer's point of view, we have a system that really has no true price equilibrium, because all the consumer sees is what they pay for out of pocket. They know what they pay for when they go see the doctor for a copay. They know what their deductible is. But after that, when the third payer kicks in, whether it's private insurance or government insurance, that's not their dollars. So the consumer intuitively wants to make sure that they have the absolute highest quality, best care possible, and they would like to have every test under the sun to make sure that the diagnosis is correct.
We got this email from Ann in Burlington who wrote, if nutrition was more focused on in people's early years, then health problems would diminish in the later years. When you look at the all-payer model, this payment reform model, is the idea that healthcare providers can get reimbursed for keeping people healthy, and it might include some of Ann's ideas of getting people on a better nutrition diet?
So I think that Ann is correct, that nutrition is a key component of our health outcomes, as is exercise and lifestyle decisions. And so let's take a step back and let's talk about the all-payer model, because most people don't know what the all-payer model even is. Some people think it's single payer. Some people think it's everybody pays the same. It just it's a tough one for people to intuitively understand what it is. So I wish we had a better name for it. I think there are people working on trying to rebrand it now. But what the all-payer model does is it moves towards looking at per capita healthcare costs. And it basically, instead of for each procedure in the fee-for-service world getting reimbursed, you're paid for a population set. So it's a per member per month payment. And basically, the healthier you keep that population, the less expensive procedures that they're going to need and things like that. So it's an incentive for wellness and prevention, which we don't have in today's system. So the all-payer model, when you take a look at it, I really want to give some credit to where credit is due, and that's to my predecessor at the Green Mountain Care Board, Al Gobay. When it became clear that Vermont was not going to be able to fully implement Green Mountain Care as envisioned under Act 48 that passed in 2011, and the governor had to pull the plug, the previous administration and Al Gobay basically took a step back and said, okay, we're not going to be successful in our movement towards the Green Mountain Care model, but how can we move forward in a way that gives benefits to Vermonters in the same direction? And, you know, I think back when we first started in my time working on the issue, back when we passed Catamount Health, we had more than double the amount of uninsured that we have today. So I don't want to say that Vermont hasn't been successful, because we have cut that number of uninsured in half. So we're moving in the right direction. But what Al said was, hey, look, we're not moving fast enough. And even if we had been able to put together a financing proposal for Green Mountain Care and implement it, it still wouldn't have been the only system that providers would have had to pay for in Vermont. So they still would have had to pay for TRICARE for our military, for all the tourists that come here and have an accident or have a health event. So there still would have been a lot of administrative red tape. And then it wouldn't have included Medicare, which is a significant portion of our population. So what they did was they went to Washington and negotiated a deal, which we refer to now as the all-payer model. And that deal includes the ability to include the Medicare population in this movement towards wellness and keeping people healthier. So I think that they were on to something in that agreement that they reached with Washington, and Vermont is now having the eyes of the country looking at it to see if anybody can actually successfully implement this new system of payment, and we'll see what happens.
So let me see if I understand this. Let's say I'm a primary care physician, and I have 500 patients. I am going to receive a certain amount of money per year or per month for each of my patients. And my job then is to keep them healthy, and hopefully the overall cost will be less than the money I'm receiving for taking care of them. Do I have that right?
Well, see, here's the rub.
Okay.
It depends on where you as the primary care physician are practicing and everything else. So there's still going to be some fee for service even built into the all-payer model. But if you're working at, for example, the University of Vermont, there's going to be risk being taken by that hospital. In the beginning, there's less risk being taken by private practitioners, but there's still some risk in there. And you're going to get paid as a private doctor a small stipend to manage that population so that you're trying to keep them healthy, prevent them from requiring expensive care. And so there are some incentives there, but it doesn't move completely away from fee-for-service if you're in that private setting.
And is this system going to take in consideration the demographics of my patient load? If I've got lots of people over the age of 50 or a whole bunch of them are under 30, is that a factor as well?
So it is a factor, and it's subject to the negotiations between the Accountable Care Organization. There's another name that gets thrown out there, and they really are the managers of the dollars in this all-payer model. And it would depend on what your agreement was with the Accountable Care Organization as far as how that is handled, as far as the change in demographics, because you may have a much less healthy population in your practice than someone else. And the Accountable Care Organization has to figure out a way to make sure that that type of inequity is accounted for. And so it's a really daunting task. And to be honest with you, as a legislator, if you had asked me 2 years ago if we would be as far along today as we are when this was being discussed, I would say I don't believe it has a snowball's chance and you know what. But I got to tell you that the people that have been working on this have really done an incredible job about moving forward. We have a segment of the Medicaid population that's in what some people keep calling a trial program today. So 2017, as we sit here, there's a segment of the population that is in really a test model of the all-payer model.
Let's go to our callers and start with Xenia in Barrie. Hi, Xenia. Welcome to the program.
Hello. This looks a lot like managed care to me, and the same financial incentive to deny services to save money. And I called them at the number that was given out when I got leafleted at a hospital on this to find out what safeguards are there to avoid lots and lots of denials of services simply to save money. Nobody has been able to answer this.
Well, that's a great question. And Kevin, that comes up a lot. A lot of people are saying if you're going to give these doctors a set amount of money per patient and they start getting close to their limit, what safeguards are there for denial of care?
So it's a great question. And Xenia, I have to tell you that your response was the same initial response that I had a couple of years ago. And I think I was quoted at the time of saying it doesn't sound anything more to me than an HMO on steroids. And but here's the difference is that you have oversight of the accountable care organizations. And it's really up to us as regulators, the Green Mountain Care Board, to make sure that there are the proper quality measurements in place. And in fact, our agreement with the federal government has quality measurements that have to be in place. And so we have to make sure that this is a rationalization of healthcare, not a rationing. People should not have wait times. They should not be denied care. But that is where if we fail at our job, it could turn into an HMO, and I believe that we have the capability to make sure that the proper safeguards are in place. And if the proper safeguards aren't being measured, we'll pull the plug.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're talking healthcare today with Kevin Mullen, who's the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. I just wanted to go back to this all-payer model for a second to see if I've got this right. There's going to be an accountable care organization, and that organization is going to set the rates or negotiate the rates with healthcare providers for their procedures going forward. Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah. So for this year, we've had two ACOs put in their budgets to the Green Mountain Care Board for review. There's OneCare, which is a joint venture that is owned 50-50 by UVM and Dartmouth-Hitchcock. And then there is SHAC, which is an accountable care organization that is affiliated with the community health centers, the federally qualified health centers in Vermont. So there are two currently. I'm still hopeful that there's a way that we could even prop up the Vermont Care Organization, the VCO, which I think will get even more buy-in if that is possible. But the Accountable Care Organization is the manager of the population.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Joan, who's calling from Ticonderoga, New York. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. We've had a couple of recent encounters with the Vermont healthcare system. My husband had a severe heart attack, and he had seven stents put in by one of the specialists at UVM. We were shocked to see when we got the bills that the insurance companies were billed for seven different operations rather than one procedure for seven stents, which took less than an hour to do. I believe there are a lot of loopholes in the law that allow the physicians, not as much as the hospitals, to overbill. And also, everybody that stuck their head in the door for a minute or more while he was there sent us a bill, which, of course, our insurance companies pay part of. And I'm concerned since a lot of the people on this side of Lake Champlain do go to UVM and Middlebury and other facilities in Vermont for their treatment. It's the closest place to go for good service.
Joan, thank you very much for your phone call. Would you say that Joan's experience is exactly why fee-for-service has to be replaced?
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know. We didn't get a chance to ask Joan the question if it was a Vermont carrier or a New York carrier that she was dealing with. So, you know, every insurance company handles things a little bit different, and every hospital handles things a little bit different. But I can tell you that UVM is at the forefront of trying to lead away from the fee-for-service model. And it sounds like she was unhappy with her experience, and I would love to have her chat with me further about that. So, you know, I know we don't have her on the line now, but if she wants to call me at the Green Mountain Care Board at some point, feel free.
Well, let's double check. Joan, are you still there by any chance?
I'm still here. I also had experience with a nursing home. I broke my leg and was stuck in a Vermont nursing home for a month. And I was shocked to see that my insurance, Medicare and UnitedHealthcare, were billed for $50,000 for the nursing home only. And that did not include two doctors that I never saw. And I was shocked at the low quality of care that they were allowed to bill for $50,000 when the primary helpers there at the nursing home were very low-paid workers that did almost all the work, and they were paid no more than McDonald's wages. And somebody is really making a huge profit over the nursing home business. I don't see how they could possibly not lose money at charging $50,000 for a month.
Kevin, did you have a question for Joan?
So Joan, I think you just answered part of the question, and that is, who are your insurers? And I think I heard you say Medicare and UnitedHealthcare. And so that is helpful. So it sounds like you had multiple payers that were involved, and that makes things a little bit trickier, plus the whole experience. On the nursing home side, so it sounds like were you getting rehab while you were in the nursing home?
Yeah, I was getting rehab. I had a severe injury with my leg, and I was immobilized for a month. And it was really a nightmare of the poor care. I mean, people in the adjacent bed fell on the floor and were left lying for an hour. Nobody would come to help. I mean, the care was atrocious. I saw no doctor whatsoever. Yet got two bills for doctor care in the hundreds of dollars. And it just went on and on. There's a massive problem there with oversight on especially the nursing homes and the doctor billing at all the medical facilities. And I think they're just able to click in a code on their computer now. Damn, they can bill, you know, this little code. And it's very hard to track them down. The reason why I was able to go through all these bills was because I had recent training on health care. I had taken some courses out of my own interest. And there's no oversight at all that I can see to stop this overbilling.
So Joan, I'm going to recommend that you give Monica Hutt at Dale a call, the Department of Aged and Independent Living, and talk about that nursing home. We at the Green Mountain Care Board, the only thing that we can really do for nursing homes is when it comes to the CON process and approving sales. We don't get into regulating what goes on a daily basis. And in fact, one of our departing members of the board, Con Hogan, has been very outspoken about his concerns about nursing homes in Vermont. And I know that if Con is listening, he would be saying, thank God somebody is talking about this, because we really do have some problem areas. We have some great nursing homes, and I don't want anybody to think that we're painting it with a broad brush, but we also hear continuously stories just like the one that you told, Joan, of improper care at nursing homes. And it leaves a very bad pit in my stomach when I hear these stories, because we don't have the ability at the Green Mountain Care Board to really do anything about it, and yet we know this problem exists. And I know that Con has said that he is going to be going and speaking to legislative committees and things like that when the session goes back in, because of his real concerns for this. And so this is not an uncommon story that you're telling, Joan.
Let's talk to Larry, who's calling from Waitsfield. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to throw in my two cents about the whole notion of a population-based health. I first start with a notion that I've rarely heard a legislator as knowledgeable about healthcare as I'm hearing now. I suspect if the federal legislators were more knowledgeable, we wouldn't be getting the recommendations for healthcare that we're getting. So what I want to say is that if we start looking at improving the health of the population and make sure that the goal is a health outcome, not a particular procedure or a number of visits, then we'll come up with a lot of innovative approaches, whether it's home visiting, focus on diet and exercise, or telemedicine, where we can provide better quality care at a lower cost. I think the other thing we have to get out of our head is the notion that if it costs more, it must be better. And that's just not true. It's certainly been shown by lots of research that simply because we spend more doesn't mean that we get better quality care. That's what I wanted to say.
Very well put, Larry. And I just want to say that having served in the Vermont Senate with our Congressman Peter Welch, I know that Peter does get health care. And it was a true pleasure working with Peter. And if people in Washington would only have some conversations with Peter about the way it was done in Vermont with people working together and not worried about party labels or who got credit, that a lot could happen in Washington.
Larry, thanks for your phone call. Let's turn to Jason in Jericho. Hey, Jason, what's on your mind today?
Hi there. I'm looking for some clarification about how the ACOs work. One of my concerns is that we have these additional parties involved in healthcare, which drive costs up because their motivations are financial, like private insurance companies as an example. And I'm wondering if ACOs have a stake in healthcare outcomes in addition to their financial interests as well.
Kevin, what about that?
So, and I get to the point here because obviously you want to try to take out as many administrative costs as possible and have the dollars that are being spent in the system being used by the provider to provide the best care to the patient. And so there is that concern, and it's a very valid point. When you take a look at it, this really isn't eliminating the administrative costs that are in the system. But in some respects, you could make an argument that it could possibly add to it. But because of the measurements that will be put in place, the Accountable Care Organization will have to deliver, or else there won't be any reason for the Accountable Care Organization anymore. So we actually are one of the few states that is way out ahead of the national average as far as keeping costs as much as possible for the actual care. So when you take a look at a company like Blue Cross Blue Shield, it's only 8% of admin costs, and yet you see elsewhere where it's double that. So I think that everybody understands the point that's being raised here, that we don't want to create another layer of bureaucracy, but we do have to have a way to measure the outcomes and a way to manage the population's health. So I don't see a way of this being a success without an accountable care organization.
Let's turn to Jeff in Jericho. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering about the cost of unreimbursed expenditures. I understand that healthcare providers and insurers have to absorb the cost of services provided that are then not reimbursed by the insurance for the person who received the services. So I'm wondering, in totality, how much is then passed back on to people who do have insurance?
So it depends on the institution. I was in Bennington last night at a forum at Bennington College. On the panel was Tom D. For that particular hospital, it's about $3 million of charitable or bad debt that they deal with. Vermont has seen a period of years of a decline in the charitable care and bad debt that dates back to Catamount, but that's starting to turn and go the other way, and it's something that we have to be concerned about. The federal laws are clear that hospitals can't turn people away, and they're going to provide care. And so if that care isn't paid for, somebody is going to be paying for it, and that somebody is you and I, and it's through the cost shift and through our tax dollars.
And the elements of the cost shift are even larger than just uncompensated care. We have the underfunding by government programs, most notably Medicaid, and private health insurance premiums have to pick up that cost. And I think I heard the head of Blue Cross Blue Shield say the other day that this accounted for 15 or 20% of their premium increase.
When someone buys private insurance, they're paying more than 140% of the actual cost of care because of that cost shift. And without that cost shift, you would find hospitals or doctor's offices not being able to survive. And the last thing we want to do is not have enough doctors in the state to take care of all our residents. So that cost shift has been a problem, and it continues to grow. And it, there are two sides to that argument. If you talk to some of my former colleagues in the legislature, they'll point to the incredible growth of costs and utilization, and they point the fingers at the hospitals and others and say, "You've got to get your act together and get costs under control." And then the hospitals, as a legislator, I can tell you that every year we went to meetings and were told about what a burden government was placing on the hospital because of the cost shift. So we're all in this together. And unless we work together on a common solution, which I believe at this point our best shot is the all-payer model, and I can't guarantee that it's going to work, but I can tell you that it's our best shot at bending the cost curve and keeping the type of quality care that we want, because we can't sustain the current path that we're on. The current path is unsustainable. The status quo isn't working, and we can't allow it to keep growing at double the rate of inflation or in a few years triple the rate of inflation. So something has to be done, and we're trying to do that something.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're discussing healthcare in Vermont with the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, Kevin Mullen. Just want to look at the Affordable Care Act for a moment, Vermont Health Connect. We saw another effort by Republican leaders in the Senate to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, failed to win enough votes this week. And now there's new attention on a bipartisan approach being drafted by Democratic Senator Patty Murray and Republican Senator Lamar Alexander to strengthen the Affordable Care Act, something that Representative Welch is also very much involved in. From your perspective at this point, does it make sense to try to strengthen the Affordable Care Act for the next couple of years?
I think there are a lot of problems with the existing law that need to be addressed, and I think that the only chance that we have of getting reform that actually means anything is if people from both sides work together. I walked in the door on May 24th as the chair of the Green Mountain Care Board, and it seems like every couple of weeks somebody gives me a call asking for my opinion on what's the latest proposal in Washington and its chances of success. And so far, I've been less than optimistic about anything happening in Washington, and I think this is the first clear chance when you can get people from both sides of the aisle working together that hopefully what they come up with will be a product that works for everyone. So I remain optimistic, but not I wouldn't bet the farm on it.
You know, one of the elements of this bipartisan plan is the creation of a reinsurance pool for very sick people. Do you think that would help?
I think it would help, but that's just a small piece of what has to be done. So, it's going to have to be a lot more than just that.
So if you could wave a magic wand and strengthen the Affordable Care Act, just briefly, how would you fix it?
So, Bob, I haven't spent a lot of time about how I'm going to fix problems in Washington. I've been kind of focused on what our tasks are here in Vermont. But I can tell you that I think that what we're trying to do in Vermont is literally a template that the rest of the country could use. And when you take a look at what Vermont has done over the years, we were way ahead of the rest of the country. So, for example, the rest of the country didn't have community rating and things like that, and we already had that in place. And in some respects, the Affordable Care Act really slowed down our efforts at healthcare reform here in Vermont because everybody's attention got focused on the exchange. So I think the first thing I would do with that magic wand is figure out a way so that there was an exchange that worked in all 50 states that people could go to and easily see their options, easily get the federal subsidies, and easily know that their bill is due on a certain date, and it worked for everyone. So that would be number one. Number two really is cost containment, because I don't think that any fix works if you don't get costs under control.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bob in Stowe. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. Let me ask a question. How does capitation solve any of these problems? You have a pot of money for a certain number of patients. Isn't the root of the problem overcharging? How about upping audits of claims that are made and rationalizing them, and look for practitioners and institutions that push the envelope and seem to put their dollar interest ahead of patient interest? What's going to happen is if you have X number of dollars for X number of patients, it's going to be an incentive to deny care. There's no doubt about it. I predict that if your system is adopted, in a year or two or three, big shots will be trying to put pressure on the doctors to get seen and jump ahead of other people. This is totally going in the wrong direction. Affluent seniors are going to leave the state in droves. Nobody's going to put themselves at the mercy of a huge bureaucracy that you have to fight with when you're sick to try to get the care that you want.
Okay, Bob, we've got your comments. We thank you for those thoughts. Kevin, how do you respond to Bob?
So I respond to Bob by saying that the only way the all-payer model succeeds is by meeting the quality outcomes and measurements that will be put in place. And if those measurements aren't being met and people aren't getting good care, then it's not going to continue.
Let's talk to Paula in Enosburg Falls. Hi, Paula. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. This is coming at the problem from another end. I think something that would really fit in well with the all-payer model would be access for everybody, guaranteed access to primary care, because, it's been shown again and again that the single best step to improving a population health and the most cost-effective way is with primary care. So I think something that's being considered now, there's a bill in the legislature for a publicly financed universal primary care, which would help all those people who have, most Vermonters have some kind of insurance, but they hesitate to go to the doctor when they have high deductibles and copays. This would get through that problem and get people access to the least expensive and most cost-effective way to get health care. Primary care is just 6% of total health care costs, and if you get people in regularly and early to sort of find out, diagnose things in an early way, you're going to save lots of money and keep people healthier.
Okay, Paula, thanks for your phone call. Kevin, do you have some thoughts about that legislation?
Well, I do have some thoughts, and also I want to say that, Paula, you've been saying the same things that I've been saying right along, is that we need to have more emphasis on primary care. And workforce in general has been an area that I've been trying to wrap my arms around, because throughout the hospital budget process, whether it's a shortage of docs or a shortage of nurses, it's clear that these are really good paying jobs that we don't have enough qualified people to fill in the state of Vermont. And so I met with Liz Cody from AHEC, which is the Loan Forgiveness Program, and tried to discuss different options that we could do to try to spur more primary care docs in Vermont. And she raised a valid issue with me, and something that I really hadn't considered prior to that, that really we're almost in an arms race with all the states, because once somebody put in place a loan forgiveness program, then the next state does it, then the next state, and each state has to kind of one-up the previous effort. And I think that what I'm falling back on, and from the research that I've done so far, is that there's a link between a large percentage of providers staying near where they had their training. And I think that really the key to success, if we want to get more primary care doctors in the state, isn't just mandating that there be this government program that pays for it, because quite frankly, I don't know where you're going to find all the primary care doctors in year one to even come close to being able to meet that need. I think the first step on this path towards trying to create better primary care in the state of Vermont is working with our leaders in higher education and figuring out ways to have expansions of existing programs and some new programs. So, for example, the College of St. Joseph had attempted to put in place a PA program, and they were unsuccessful in their efforts. But that's really what we need. We need to work with our leaders in higher ed to turn out more graduates so that we actually have the primary care doctors to move to a system that would have that care.
And we see that a very large percentage of the primary care doctors in Vermont are over the age of 60 and plan to retire in the next 5 years.
It's a very scary statistic.
It would be a huge hole and a huge gap in some parts of the state, wouldn't it?
It's already a hole and a gap in some parts of the state.
I mean, from your perspective, is primary care kind of the backbone of our healthcare system?
I believe it is.
And just, we're almost out of time, but where do we stand with all payer? What's the next kind of deadline, the next thing that needs to happen?
So the ACOs have presented their budgets to us. I think that November 13th is the magic date for us to have our work done on those budgets. And we have a series of scale targets that we reached an agreement on with the federal government, and that goes out between now and 2022. And so we're on schedule to meet those early years. There's a lot more work that has to be done if we're going to meet the overall targets, but I think that we're in a place that it's possible.
A lot of important issues with healthcare. Kevin Mullen, chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thank you, Bob. It's been a pleasure.